Yeah.
We're going to talk now, just briefly, actually, about context scenarios, because this is really going to be part of your project charter. Part of the assignment is being able to answer these questions. So when we talk about a context scenario, what we really mean is, you know, from the scenario perspective, is the what, where, when, why, who, those types of questions. You know, so who's using it? What are they trying to do? What service do you provide? What's the environment in which they are using it? Is there a sense of urgency? You know, is it casual use? Is it long-term use? Is it quick hit use? Stuff like that. So there's a whole series of questions that we can ask, like what's the setting in which the device will be used? Now here's where you have to be careful. In an ideal situation, you would have access to research or be able to do that research yourself, right? So there's an existing product in the market that I want to do something better than what they are already doing, so we go out and we study what the current product is. How is it being used? Who is using it? Where are they using it, right? What are they using it to do? If it's a brand new thing that you're trying to create, it's a little harder to go out into the existing market and say, what would you do? What are you doing? And so we see things, you know, like prototypes that are being used, and they start sometimes at really, really low fidelity. When the iPhone was first being created, they literally made little blocks of wood of different sizes and shape and roundedness, and they put lead weights in it to change the weight of the device, and they changed the polish on the front for the smoothness of the touchability, and they just had people carry them around. There's a block of wood with a lead weight in it. It's not a phone, it's not gonna do anything. But what they wanted to test, sorry, was that like thunder, yeah, or was that like, did you see lightning?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed it. I missed that so much. I'm from New Orleans in a good big storm, you know, but out here, people are like, oh, wow, it's really raining. And it's like, no, I can see a block away. It is not raining, right? A heavy storm is when you can't see out your own window. That's when it's really pouring. Anyhow, so they're carrying a lead-weighted block of wood around in their pocket, and they're just being asked, how does it feel in your hand? How does it feel in your pocket? How do you pull it out? When might you use it? Does it fit the right way? And as they worked on the form factor, they were continuing to work on other aspects of the device. And eventually they got to points where they had physical electronic prototypes. And they test things like, where's the mic? Where are the buttons? You know, where do you put the earpiece? Is the screen shifted toward the top, exactly in the middle, shifted to the bottom? How does this button feel? All of that stuff. They tested the hell out of it, right? So they really were trying to understand all of these questions. They were trying to establish a context scenario for a device that did not yet exist. And that's a lot harder to do than to say, I am going to do better than what is already out there. Because you can go out and study what's already out there. So what's the setting? Is it used by one or, one more thing about this. Be careful about assumptions too. So one of the assumptions about designing for mobile is that mobile is quick and mobile is on the go, right? Wrong. Really wrong, right? More than 80% of mobile usage is on your butt on the couch in front of a television. Right?
Oh.
I heard that one. It's not down the street, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, right? It's not. I'm watching television and I want to know something that I've just seen, right? Like, is Purina dog chow better than Iams dog chow? Google, Purina, Iams, compare. Oh, commercial break over. Right? And so you see these patterns where it's extended usage in your home. Not on the go, right? Yeah, you use it in line at the grocery store and while you're waiting for Muni and maybe while you're walking down the street to check on something, but the bulk of the usage is actually in very casual personal environments. So our conceptions, our preconceived notions of what is mobile usage have completely turned out to be wrong. We're doing it at home on the sofa because it's easier to reach into your pocket and pull out your phone than it is to stand up and walk out the room and across the house and turn on a computer to do it. This is near you, The vast majority of smartphones, by the way, are never farther than 4 feet from the person who owns them. Did you know that? It's like literally 24/7 on or near your person. Most of you notice when your phone is not with you, right? Not when it is with you, but when it isn't. So they're always there, they're always on, and they're network enabled. So why should I walk across the house to do a simple little thing like Google the definition of a word? Nope, thank you, there it is, and I'm done. So, will it be used by one or multiple individuals? Is it a solitary or a shared experience, right? Is it a public or private experience? Is it a shared experience in a public space, a shared experience with strangers, or a shared experience with close friends and family in a private space? Those have very, very different design considerations. Another thing that's been interesting about tablets as they become more popular is that families are buying them, but they start with one, and then they realize that they don't have, most of the tablets don't have an account-based system on them. So everyone in the family who uses the tablet sees what everyone else in the family who uses the tablet has been using the tablet for. So the browsing history is there, the photographs are there, the game scores are there, the email is all right there. And so what was thought that tablets would be a personal device has turned out to be a little bit wrong in many families where tablets are shared second screens, right? And so the concept of having separate accounts and a sense of security and privacy among individuals, even for close family members, has surfaced as a need on these devices. And the way wealthy people are solving that is by buying individuals their own tablets. No, literally. Houses that can afford it buy multiple tablets as a proxy for account-based security systems. I can't get an account on here, I'll spend $700 more on another tablet. That way you don't ever see what I am doing on the tablet. But it's a question that might have been detected, right? Is the usage going to be for brief, moderate, intermittent, or extended periods of time? Quick hit, few minutes at a time, work on it for hours, will I do it every day? Is it going to happen once every 7 days? You know, how often am I doing this? When am I going to come to it? And it's close too, right? Because we saw the flash and we heard it right away, so it's like within a mile of us, so that's in the city. So, will it be used for brief, moderate, or extended periods of time? Will the person using it be frequently interrupted? Right? Do I have a focus task, or am I doing this in an environment where there's a lot of other stuff happening? And believe it or not, even if you're sitting on the couch watching television, that's often a focused task, right? For most of us, television is noise. And so it's really easy for us to just shift our attention to another screen, and it's like the television is radio or is off at that point, right? And so we do what we need to do, and then we shift our attention back. On the other hand, if I'm trying to do something while walking down the street, I have little focus. Although, you know, walking around the sidewalks of San Francisco, I think people have a whole lot of focus because they clearly are not seeing me or the other things they're walking into. Are there other products or devices that are used in conjunction with this device? So is it meant to be used on its own, or does it connect with other stuff? So one of the things about the tablets that has really sort of surprised people is that I referred to them a moment ago as second screens, because people are using them while they're watching television, right? So they're seeing things on television and they're on IMDb looking up the actor in the scene in the movie they've just seen because they know there's another movie that actor's in and they can't remember which movie it is. So they go to IMDb and they look up the person and they're like, that's the other movie the person, see, I told you that was what they were in. So the tablet now is an extension of the media consumption experience. And they didn't quite plan for that, it just sort of evolved into that. And so we've got apps for it. And now the television manufacturers have apps on the smartphones and the tablets that allow us to control the television, right? So you can install an app that connects to your TV or your cable box, and you scroll through all of the programming on your tablet while you're watching television, and you set things to record on your DVR as if it's a really big remote control on a second screen. Oh, that's not the lightning. Okay. So, other examples of products and devices that are used in conjunction with this. Nike and Apple have a relationship going on, right? With the shoes that track your training and are plugged into your smartphone or into your iPod. They use GPS to track where you are running, the rate at which you're running, geolocation to map it out. They know if it's an incline, how steep is the incline, the rate of the run. Using GPS, it calculates your speed. You can download the data. There's a graphing system around it. There are even some programs that if you're hitting a wall, any runners in the room? Okay, a few runners. I'm not a runner, but if you're hitting a wall, then there's a setting where you basically like tap the thing and it changes the musical style. It changes your playlist into something more energetic to like pump you up and push you through the wall. So you're not doing well and your Nike shoes are like, get your lazy ass going. And your iPod switches from the I'm running, running, running to you're training, 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 and suddenly, you know, the dance music kicks in instead of the pop, you know, whatever. So it changes. How much complexity is permissible? This is a really big question. And it's the kind of thing that we only really address through iterative design. But a lot of what we are dealing with are not really simple tasks. They are complex, multi-step, maybe multi-time period, multi-person things that are happening. And we have to make decisions all along the way of how complex, how difficult are we willing to make it? We can make assumptions and we can strip things out to the bare minimum in order to simplify it, but we could oversimplify it so that it no longer has value to the person who's using it, right? So I could take my phone and pull everything out except the ability to make phone calls. But then why would I have a reason to buy this? Right? It would be really easy to use because all it does is make phone calls, but I've got this wonderful screen and a camera and you know, flash memory and a place to plug in my headphones, and all it does is call, right? So it does other things, but how many more things can we make it do before it passes over some little, you know, complexity point, and it's like, nah, it's too much, it's too hard. So we don't want to swing the pendulum in the too easy, we don't want to swing the pendulum in the too complex. So we're always balancing these things. The challenge we have with versioning in products, and we see this in desktop software, is that as humans, we want things that do more than the previous version, right? Not just better, more. We're driven by more, right? I mean, that's why people spell things online like more and more, right? Like they have the roar and the more together there. That's important to us. We're not necessarily rational about it. So desktop software suffers from levels of complexity being added year after year after year. So Photoshop is now, what, like officially 20 years old or something like that? It's like a gig in size. I mean, if you had told Adobe 10 years ago that Photoshop was going to be able to magically remove people from any photo and algorithmically replace the background, and oh, by the way, it's going to be a gig in size, they'd be like, yeah, right, okay? Yet, that's what the tool does. And it does a lot more than the vast majority of every single user ever uses it for. There's a handful of people who tap into all of the things. The vast majority tap into a few of them. Why? Because we need more features to justify the upgrade and the expense to go more. But our need for features means increasing complexity. And these companies run into issues when they try to simplify their experiences, because the easiest way to simplify them is to take out the things that people don't use. but you can't convince people that if you don't need it, we're going to remove it and you haven't been using it, because if it's there, I might use it someday, just in case, right? Keep it there, I might need it tomorrow. You haven't needed it for 15 years. Why would you need it tomorrow? I don't know, but don't take it out. It's a real problem when we're trying to figure out what do people need. We're trying to set the context, and it's a difficult decision. What primary activities need to be accomplished to meet the person's goals? We could just summarize this in one word, right? Focus. If you're going to do one thing, how can you do it better than anyone else? Or if there's three things it needs to do, the other 12 don't have to be there, right? So it's tied in really closely to the complexity. But we have to understand the tasks. What needs to be done? What are their goals? What is going to make this person smile when they are finished? And then the last one. What is the expected end result or outcome of using the device? In other words, what's the solution you offer, right? We're basically asking, what's the problem, when do you encounter it, how do you solve it, and what's the answer? That's really what a context scenario is. And they're just, if you're a journalist, they really are the who, what, when, where, why, how questions. You just kind of answer all of that. All right, so these are questions I want you to keep in mind as you're writing your own project charters, as you are thinking things. I'll put these back up on the screen in a moment. What I want you to do now is to break up into groups. How many do we have? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22. So let's break up into groups of 3 or 4. That's a good number. Larger than that, and it's easy to sit and be silent. And I know I'm going to warn you about this every single class. What am I about to say? If at all possible, please resist the I can touch you, you're in my group method of group finding, right? It's good to jumble it up, get up, mix around the room, sit in a different place, work with different people on a weekly basis. Try to get a different group every time we do this. It's okay if you want to do it tonight, I'm tired too. Oh, I can touch you, you're in my group. But next week I'm going to tell you to change it up. So here's the task. Coffee vending machines. All right, you may remember things like this, where you walk up and you put in your money and you press a bunch of buttons for how you want your coffee, and then a little cheap paper cup drops down, and then oddly you hear gears grinding, and then brown liquid comes out and kind of fills the cup about two-thirds of the way, and then maybe it beeps or something at you and you reach in and you take the tepid muddy water. So, we have an old-style coffee vending machine. In this exercise, I want you to think about, and I'll put up the context scenario things here in a moment. I want you to think about how can we revisit this concept of an interactive coffee machine, vending machine. It needs to be an interactive, standalone, self-service device. That's the only requirement, right? It can have physical buttons, it can have a touch screen, I don't care. It can be desktop sized, it can be, you know, wardrobe sized, I don't care. You get to choose. Where is it being installed? Who are you targeting? Office workers? People in airports? People in train stations, public stations? Is it a Starbucks machine in a Starbucks for the people who can't wait in line? You know, whatever. You choose the place, you choose the people, but it's all about maybe rethinking the interactive self-service coffee vending machine. And start answering some of the questions about the context scenarios, like where do you want to put it? Is it shared or individual experience? What type of duration of the experience is it? Focused or interrupted? Anything else we use with it, like how are you going to pay, right? How much complexity is permissible? Starbucks coffee, I still don't understand how they order it, right? I go in and I'm like, coffee. Just coffee, like venti, well, that's a fake word, right? What primary activities need to be accomplished to meet the person's goals? Well, get coffee, obviously, but what if there's like a loyalty program? So I've got a prepaid Starbucks card with an RFID chip in it that tracks when and where I purchase, and I get loyalty credits that can be turned into Starbucks that I can get cash for or something. What's the expected end result or outcome of using the device? Caffeinated happiness. Right? That's our solution. So we'll say, I'll give you that one right now. Caffeinated happiness. The rest of them are up to you.
Isn't that you rule out decafs?
You can get decaf if you want. But or, you just said, or a triple espresso latte capafreppa chef or something. Right? Whatever you want. You make your own. So, groups of three or four. Divvy up however you want. This is kind of a brainstorming exercise. But as a group, think about where do you want to put this and who. So we're focusing on the context scenarios. Just to let you know, next week, the in-class exercise is going to be sketching these devices, okay? So the people you work with tonight, I'm going to ask you to work with again next week, so mix it up a little bit. Tonight, you're defining your project charter and what you want to do. Next week, you'll sketch the ideas with your group. So someone needs to be the designated keeper of paper or whatever you write down. All right, go.